Yashodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajanaranjana Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaradhari Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaradhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jai Om Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Pai Raja Kacharya Shri Tara Shishimadesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bhava Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya This morning we are reading from fourth canto chapter 25, entitled The Characteristics of King Puranjana, text 7. Narada uvacha bho bho prajapate rajan pashun pashun pasya tvaya dvare samgya pitan jiva sangha han sanghan nir grinena saha srashaham narada uvacha bho bho prajapate rajan pashun pasya tvaya dvare samyapitan jivasanghan nirgrinena sahasrashah narada uvacha bho bho prajapate rajan pashun pasya tvaya dvare ramgya pitan jiva sanghan nirgrinena sahasrashah narada uvacha bho bho prajapate rajan pashun pasya tvaya dvare samya pitan jiva sanghan nirgrinhena sahasrasham narada uvacha bho bho prajapate rajan pashun pasya tvaya dvare samya pitan jiva sanghan nirgrinena sahasrasham Samyapitan jiva sanghan nigranena sahasrasham narada uvacha Yeah. Advaitam Jiva Sangam Ingrenena Sahasrasha Narada Uvacha Bobo Prajapate Rajan Yapitam Jiva Sangam Ingrenena Sahasrasha Narada Uvacha Sambhya Pitanjiva Sangam Ingrenena Sahasrasha.
Ladies,
Narada Uvacha Bobo Prajapate Rajan Pashun Pashya Tayadware Samgya Pitanjiva Sangam Ingrinena Sahasrasha.
Narada Uvacha. The great sage Narada replied, Bobho, hello, Prajapate, O ruler of the citizens, Rajan, O king, Pashun, animals, Pashya, please see, Tvaya, Vayu, Advare, in the sacrifice, Samgya Pitan, killed, Jiva Sanghan, groups of animals. Nigrinhena, without pity. Sahasrashaha, in thousands. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The great saint Narada said, O ruler of the citizens, my dear king, please see in the sky those animals which you have sacrificed without compassion and without mercy in the sacrificial arena. Purport. Because animal sacrifice is recommended in the Vedas, there are animal sacrifices in almost all religious rituals. However, one should not be satisfied simply by killing animals according to the directions of the scriptures. One should transcend the ritualistic ceremonies and try to understand the actual truth, the purpose of life. Narada Muni wanted to instruct the king about the real purpose of life and invoke a spirit of renunciation in his heart. Knowledge and the spirit of renunciation, Jnana Vairagya, are the ultimate goal of life. Without knowledge, one cannot become detached from material enjoyment. And without being detached from material enjoyment, one cannot make spiritual advancement. Karmis are generally engaged in sense gratification. And for this end, they are prepared to commit so many sinful activities. Animal sacrifice is but one such sinful activity. Consequently, by his mystic power, Narada Muni showed King Parchinabhadhishat the dead animals which he had sacrificed. Om Gyana Timirandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaham Namo Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prashta Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishe Shashnivari Paschati Deshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shirveta Garadar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Narada Uvacha, Bobo Prajapate Rajan Pashun Pashya Tvaihadvare Samgya Pitanjiva Sanghan Nigrinhena Sahasra Shaha. Translation again. The great saint Narada said, O ruler of the citizens, my dear king, please see in the sky those animals which you have sacrificed without compassion and without mercy in the sacrificial arena. So in this text, it's very interesting to note that Narada Muni is, again, as it is proved, such a powerful
sage, such an interesting personality, that he has such a potency to show the particular living entity particular situations that it awaits them after this particular lifetime that they are in. So he has a potency that somebody else can envision whatever awaits him in the future. Just imagine if somebody of us would be able to do that. I mean, what kind of preaching we would be doing? It'd be incredible. And people would understand really the law of action and reaction and what awaits them for the, any particular activity that they are doing. It's such a wonderful potency. It's such a wonderful boon, you may say, or capacity or that Narada Muni is having. It's something similar like to what Sanjaya, for example, was able to present to Dhritarashtra, again by the mercy of, in this case, of his spiritual master, Śrīla Vyāsadeva. It's some kind of a transcendental television that you can see, that you can, of course, but that was at the present moment, but this is related here in the future. In the future, what awaits this particular king? And this is something that Narada Muni, as an expert preacher, of course, knows how to utilize all the different preaching capacities that he has. And he understands that in this particular situation, this is the real mean that will awaken the king from the particular activities that he has been performing in the name of the religion, as we will hear. And as we hear, as we heard already in the verse itself, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning. So Narada is an expert preacher. First of all, many times we see that people are even not aware of what is going on in their lives and what is the life meant for. And many times what we have to do, we have to slap them, so to say. We have to really awaken them by something very shocking, some kind of a shocking information that will make them think about the spiritual life or the purpose of the human existence. So something shocking has to be there, some kind of a information that will really make them sane. Because before, as we understand, becoming Krishna conscious, we have to become conscious. So becoming conscious means being aware of our existence here in the material world as the existence which is temporary and which has really nothing to do with our real aim of life. And as Srila Prabhupada would define knowledge, understanding what means, what is spirit, what is matter, what is difference between them and who is the controller of both of those things. So in order to awaken people, sometimes we have to give them some shocking kind of experience. Unless that is done, of course, in many cases, then people won't take spiritual life very seriously. They will take it very casually. There was once one example of one boy when I was in Gujarat initially when I arrived to India in previous century. There was one boy who was very kind of determined. He was very staunch follower of Mayavad philosophy. And he would argue very often, everything is energy. Everything is, one. And the goal of life is definitely just to merge within that particular energy, that particular Brahman that is there. And he couldn't differentiate between, you know, personality or energy, or there was no any kind of dualistic concept within his frame of understanding. And therefore, one devotee, seeing this happening after time and time on, he decided to take some kind of bold step, which meant actually that the next time that boy came and said everything is energy, everything is one, the devotee mildly slapped him on the face. And then he asked him, "So who slapped you?" "I didn't do it. It's just an energy. It's just the energy that slapped you. So don't blame me." And then this boy was so shocked that he actually just left, and everybody was thinking, hey, this is very bad preaching, actually. It's like, we shouldn't do this. And initially, yes, you know, kind of everybody was, you know, kind of negatively disposed over such kind of a example. But after a few days, that boy came back and he said, hey, I realized, actually, it's a fact. You know, now I'm, you know, by doing this particular, by performing this particular act, you helped me to understand actually that there is a difference, that there is a person, that there is somebody who controls the energy, that it's not just energy by itself, that somebody who is superior behind the energy is a person. So it's a just some kind of a, it's an example of a very bold step that sometimes is required in the spiritual life. Of course, we have to be careful. An expert preacher will know basically how to present the spiritual knowledge in a particular time, place and circumstance according to the persons he sees. And in this case, of course, we would say there was no any other way. And of course, we know in our Guru Parampara, even Madhvacharya and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, that they said the Mayavadis, they need stick, they have to be beaten. Otherwise, they won't understand, they won't get it. You need something shocking, you need something drastic to be done in order to change their wrong conceptions about the purpose of life and their understandings of the Vedic scriptures. So what Narada Muni does here, what is he doing here? He also acts in such a shocking way in a sense of presenting the future, showing the future of this particular king. What will happen to the king if he doesn't stop with this particular type of activities, namely sacrifices that he was performing in the name of the religion? And he said, and he told him, he said, you see all these animals actually that you have killed, they're actually waiting for you so that you can be, you know, that you will basically also be killed in the same way by them, and you will have to suffer so greatly. Same thing Narada Muni did in the case of Mrigari the hunter. He showed him actually. So of course we can't do this. It would be, as I said, it would be very wonderful if we would be able, really, somebody comes here and we show to the people, hey, you see here doing all this and this and this and this and this, and this is what awaits you. That would be very enlivening, that would be very eye-opening experience for everybody. We can't do this. We can just rely on the mercy of Krishna that somehow or other, by presenting this knowledge, people will come somehow or other again to their senses and take to this particular process of Krishna consciousness and stop performing sinful activities which are greatly loading this present time, this planet. So many sinful acts have been performed again in the name of the religion. That is the greatest misguidance that actually it's happening nowadays in the world. In the name of the religion, so many atrocities have been committed. It's happening everywhere. And it has been happening, as we know, as we see here, since time immemorial. So therefore, we have to be very careful when we present the spiritual knowledge and how to present the spiritual knowledge to the people so that they don't misunderstand actually what is, because, you know, what is irreligion, what is religion? Usually that's a demonic propensity. They take things to be vice versa. But in the case of the devotees presenting the knowledge to those who are innocent, we should tell them actually what is really a religious way and what is not a religious way. Because people, most often, they see bad things happening in many religious organizations, and they tend to, you know, put everything in the same basket. They tend to classify everything as same, and therefore they get repelled from any kind of religious life. But mostly they're just innocent personalities. Like now there is a very growing trend going on of atheism. People become atheists because they don't find the real message. They don't find the real truth. They see so many things, you know, happening again in the name of the religion. And therefore they understood somehow or other, they have some common sense and understood, hey, they understand whatever is going on, actually it's not really as it should be. There is always the feeling that maybe it's not like that. That it's not as it should kind of happen. And therefore devotees, of course, have the task and have the duty to inform everybody actually what the real religious principles are. And that's something that it's not easy again. But coming back to the story, Narada Muni then expertly presented this particular knowledge to the king. And interestingly, he speaks, of course, king, somehow or other, at least he was favorable, and he requested Narada Muni to enlighten him in spiritual life. But still, and we see nowadays people, they're not favorable at all, and then how do we approach them? How do we enlighten them? That's even more difficult task in some ways. But Narada Muni uses here an allegorical story of King Puranjana, which is interesting, because many times egos of the personalities, if you tell them, hey, you're doing something wrong, it shouldn't be done like this, they can't bear this. They can't accept this particular thing, that something is going wrong. If you tell somebody directly again, like I said, in one way Narada Muni is preaching directly, but in another sense he milds everything and he starts speaking allegorically. It's not directly kind of, you know, hey, it's not you. Because people's ego will become hurt. We know Srila Prabhupada, how he said, how he used to preach also, he used an interesting technique. He would say to the people, hey, you're such a wonderful scholar, you know so much, you know, you have so much knowledge, but actually meaning speaking all the nonsense, but please, you know, sit down and hear what we have to say in some way. So he would kind of glorify the person, but pointing out actually that whatever that person is kind of presenting actually doesn't have any meaning whatsoever. And then he would come to the real presentation of the spiritual knowledge. So Narada Muni here, he doesn't really want to hurt the person directly. I mean, because sometimes directly if we say something to somebody, people may feel hurt. They can't bear it. They can't digest it. So it's very difficult. So he speaks in allegorical way. Speaks about somebody else. We know in the Vedic tradition, the custom is if the mother-in-law wants to instruct her daughter-in-law, she will instruct her daughter. She won't do it directly in a way. So in this way, Narada Muni also, he speaks about somebody else. He doesn't want to directly point out. And of course, many times it depends on relationship. Depends on the relationship. But initially, when we meet somebody, if we see, we can, you know, we can probe, we can try somehow or other to little wake them, shock them in some with some kind of a very drastic information about the activities or life or whatever is going on related to them. But then we should mild things down and then, you know, try to make them favorable. Try to make them favorable in a sense that they at least try to accept in some way and take to this particular process. So there are different ways, of course, that we have to see. And that's not easy. That requires a lot of experience, again, to try to judge the person and present this particular philosophy. But we see how Narada Muni, by his personal example, he's showing us how expert he is and how he knows to deal with different kind of personalities. Which, of course, here in the case of King Parchina Barhishad, he performed so many different kinds of sacrifices. He thought that he's doing the right thing. That he's doing something that actually everybody else should do. And he as a king, yadyada charati shreshtas, tatta teveta rojanaha, sat pramanam kuru te loka sadanu vartante. Like Krishna says, instructing Arjuna actually, you know, you as a leader actually should show the example to the people who are going to follow. So in this case also the king, Parchina Barhishit, as a king, if he performs activities which are wrong actually according to the scriptures, but again in the name of the scriptures, that he's going to mislead everybody. Again, another example of how important it is to preach to the leaders of the society, because they're the ones who are leading everybody else basically. Of course, Narada Muni just doesn't limit himself to any particular class of people to preach. He is so compassionate, he's so merciful that he includes everybody, he's preaching to everybody. But of course, mostly, the most effective way is to approach to those who are the leaders. And if they get the point, somehow or other, if they're convinced about this particular philosophy, then many others will follow. And this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted to do. And Srila Prabhupada was stressing very much, especially preaching to the scientists, like in Bhaktivedanta Institute. So, mercy is a very important factor here, that again, Narada Muni as a preacher is exhibiting. We know the basic example, very often heard, that the mercy is one of the pillars of the spiritual life. Like we have this table, it stands on the four legs, or you may call it four pillars. So mercy is one of those. In the case of arrival or appearance of Kali, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, when he was personified as a very dark personality in the kingdom of King Parikshit, he was beating the bull and he broke the three legs of the bull. And the bull represents the Dharma, and we know the earth is represented by the cow. So while doing such kind of a terrible activity, the King Parikshit was so upset and he didn't allow definitely the bull to be harmed, and he immediately drew the sword to kill the Kali. But of course, because the Kali pleaded and took shelter of the king, as a matter of duty, had to provide a shelter to the someone who approached him in this particular way. So of course we know he sent him to particular places where gold and a what else? Woman? No? Well, gold is stored, basically. That was initially. But the point was that the Kali was breaking these pillars of the Dharma. And three pillars he broke already. Mercifulness, purity, and austerity. The four pillars that represent these particular things. And we know, and the only thing left over that is said here in Kali Yuga at present is the truthfulness. It's only a little bit, some of the truthfulness left over. Which we know, again, what we stressed out by the following the four regulative principles. That mercy represents basically no animal killing or no meat eating, which is discussed herein. And then truthfulness with no gambling, engaging in any frivolous activities as such. Purity by no illicit relationships. And austerity by controlling the senses, no intoxications. So mercy has such an important role to play in the religious life. And definitely the devotees who are so compassionate towards the living entities, they naturally exhibit such kind of a propensity of the mercifulness towards everybody, because they understand how everybody is suffering because of particular activities that are performed, especially within this age of Kali. Such a terrible atrocity is going on. And again, as we see here, unfortunately, the worst thing in the name of the religion. So King Parchinabarhishad was killing so many animals in the sacrifices. And he thought, hey, I'm doing the great stuff. And I'm advancing spiritually. And I'm going to enjoy in the heaven because I'm performing so many yagyas. So many animals have been killed by me, and I'm going to advance. But actually he didn't think, what about the animals? Are they advancing? Are they really advancing? Narada Muni here points out that they were suffering. The real purpose of the such sacrifices, which we understand in Kali Yuga, that are forbidden, Gashvamedha Gavalambam, Ashvamedha Gavalambam, that actually animal sacrifices are forbidden because there are no qualified persons to perform such kind of yagyas nowadays in the age of Kali. And what was that yagya? Yagya was actually that the animal would enter into the sacrificial fire and then would emerge out within a completely new body, either of a demigod or either some higher living entity, or as a higher living entity. So that was the test, actually, whether the persons or the brahmanas have the power to perform any particular sacrifice or not. That was the test. And then king would know, yes, the brahmanas are qualified, we can proceed with performance of the yagya. So that was actually the real meaning and the purpose of the sacrifice. And that animal would definitely benefit because it would get a higher body. It will get a higher form of life. It wasn't meant just for some kind of a killing. Which again, it was, as we know, even in the age of Kali, as I said, the Kali himself came and started breaking the pillars of the religious life. And in the case of Karma Mimamsa philosophy, that was very much prominent before time of Gautama Buddha. So many animals have been sacrificed in the name of karma, in the name of spiritual life, in the name of the Vedic scriptures. Same thing was going on. And then the Buddha definitely had had to appear to stop all these terrible activities going on in the name of the religion, because everybody was following. And people, those who approached Buddha initially, they understood it was so obvious that something is wrong, that this is not the real path, this is not the way of Dharma. And of course, what Buddha did, again, is, you know, as incarnation of Krishna, of course, in this age of Kali, it is said that this Buddha, it's not a Vishnu tattva, but a Jiva tattva. Anyway, that's a different point. But what he did as an expert preacher, again, he just had to absolutely eliminate the Vedic knowledge in a sense of discarding it as non-useful at this particular moment and preach, just reject the Vedic knowledge and accept the philosophy that I'm presenting. And he had a very good arguments to convince the people of that particular time, just to somehow or other give up the activities that they were doing again in the name of the religion. So Buddha was expert and very much empowered personality again to present this particular knowledge, so to reject the Vedas. And of course, by the Krishna's arrangement, the advancement of the theological thought again then started with Shankaracharya by bringing back Vedas into the use, and further on with the Vaishnavacharyas, who presented the proper Siddhanta and understanding of the Vedic principles. But we see that propensity to perform any kind of a sinful activity is there within everybody. Everybody tries to actually satisfy their own senses and justify it according to the religious scriptures. And this is where the degradation actually takes place. Instead of elevating ourselves to the particular level of higher consciousness, they say before, you know, we become Krishna conscious, we have to become conscious, as I said earlier. So the point is, instead of elevating ourselves to higher consciousness, we have the tendency to degrade everything else down to our particular level. So therefore we misuse the Vedic statements or the religious instructions just for the sake of our own sense gratification, and we try to justify so many different activities that we are doing just in order to be kind of happy in this particular material world. So this is the greatest difficulty and greatest obstacle that everybody has to face, because that's wherein the degradation actually takes place. And therefore the spiritual leaders are always have that task, and Krishna himself has to come in order to re-establish again the real religious principles. Like we know, in the time of Mahabharata, we hear there were so many yagyas, there were so many sacrifices. Why did Krishna come? Everybody was following the Vedas. Why did Krishna come? There was no need. Brahmanas were there, they were chanting, but they didn't understand the real purpose of these particular sacrifices and the Vedas. And therefore Krishna says, I have to come. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharatam adbhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijami aham paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chadurshkitan dharma sanstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. I have to come to re-establish religious principles, of course, to protect the devotees and kill the miscreants. Millennium after millennium, because of that degradation takes place. Yes, people are performing certain religious activities, but actually those activities are not really with the purpose, original purpose that they're meant for. People are misusing them for their own sense gratification. And such kind of and all this kind of, in the name of the religion, so many living entities suffer just because of that. Misguiding principles that are proponed by the so-called leaders of the society. Also, what is going on nowadays, so-called leaders of the society, they just pose as religious personalities to get votes, whereas they don't care about the real Dharma. And we have very nearby such a great slaughterhouse that is slaughtering so many cows every day, thousands and thousands of cows. But the political leaders will pose as a great, you know, religious personalities. We are very pious. Please vote for us. So that's a terrible thing that is going on nowadays that we have to again point out. First it starts in the name of religion, and later on it ends up having no religion whatsoever. Of course, we understand in the scriptures that there will be always persons having such kind of a mentality. For example, those who want to satisfy their taste buds of the tongue by eating meat, and for them particular sanctions have been given. It's not something that is really approved, but it's some kind of a some kind of a license, but with some kind of a license, it's something that it's allowed for them to be done. So therefore, the Vedic scriptures, when they speak about, for example, sacrifices or meat eating, they give particular rules and regulations to be followed, which are very difficult. And any sane person who wants to follow such kind of process will actually very soon realize that how troublesome actually it is, better to give it up. So some kind of a sanction is given in this way. In the case of sacrifices, we know that the animal which has to be sacrificed, it has to be just first of all to find such an animal which has particular lakshana or qualities. It's almost impossible. It's so difficult. And then the whole procedure is so discouraging. Anyway, I won't go into it, but it's so discouraging that actually any sane person would really give it up. As soon as you understand that actually he has to be reborn and killed by the same animal, like in case here of the King Parchina Barhichat. He's shown that particular thing. You've killed so many animals, but they're all waiting for you to be killed in your next life. And you're going to have to suffer. So any sane person will give this particular process. But people then, what we see, it starts with in the name of the religion, and after all, the religion is completely out. And particular sacrifice just becomes a slaughterhouse. And that's what we have nowadays. We have just slaughterhouses. Halal or whatever, again, you know, it's like, it's all in the name of the religion. We'll do everything, or, you know, we are not causing pain. Oh yeah, you're not causing the pain. We are doing it very nicely. We have a very sharp knife. It won't cause the pain. Wonderful. That's one way. But of course, many others. And it causes the pain. Nobody wants to be harmed. Nobody wants to kill. Everybody wants to live. Even cockroach, you know, if you want to approach him, he's going to run for his life. He's afraid. Everybody is afraid. You know, many people justify, like in the West, there was the concept that initially in early Christianity was there, that animals don't have a soul. So, of course, originally there was a concept that everybody, all the early church fathers, for example, were very strict vegetarians. But later on, as I said, the degradation as it took place, then some other so-called fathers, church fathers, start to justify their gluttony by saying that animals don't have a soul. Saint Augustine also said that the woman don't have soul as well. So you can see how very intelligent actually his proposal was. So just justifying again religious, so-called religious principles for their own sense gratification. Such a great prominent personalities and philosophers. So this is degradation that actually is taking place. There is no soul we can do. Everything is meant for our sense gratification, actually. No, everything is not meant for our sense gratification. Everything is meant for the pleasure of Krishna, for the pleasure of God. And we are just the instruments, actually, to give such kind of a pleasure to God, not for us, ourselves. Of course, we understand we are getting everything naturally if we follow such kind of a process. But people are so selfish and so irreligious, so demoniac, actually. They don't care about anything or anybody else. And therefore, animal protection, as we understand, it's so important. Krishna said, "Sarva yonishu konte amurte sambhavantiha." All the living entities are my parts and partials, my living, my sons, basically. So, father, simple again, common example. Father would never like, you know, if one son hurts another son. And it would be very cautious to instruct everybody to, of course, live in the harmony, very nicely in the family. So, but that's something that's not going on nowadays. And as I said, so many killing is going on in the name of religion and not in the name of the religion. But it's justified in so many different ways. So, one thing that I've been requested also to mention, it's a cow protection in that sense, how important actually is. And how devotees actually should also put it as some kind of a priority nowadays, because people don't have, general mass of people who are ignorant, they're so misled by the media that they're not even aware actually what is going on. They're not even aware what kind of atrocities have been committed, and they're not aware actually, even when they indulge themselves in any kind of a side activities connected to this particular terrible thing, that they are not aware that this is something that is actually very sinful and that causes pain to somebody else. So bringing up that kind of a propaganda and preaching again and presenting the facts as they are, it's something that again should awaken people very much. Because nobody likes to see any terrible violence committed. And this is what people are not aware. In America, hamburgers were advertised that they're glowing on the farms. Hamburgers are going on the farms. And the children, you know, there was some nice cartoon for the kids. So that they can, you know, buy the hamburger in the hamburger. They didn't show up the pictures of the slaughterhouse, what's going on there. The way you get really getting that hamburger. So that's not there. So sometimes we have to, again, like Narada Muni is using that shocking example. Hey, first of all, see how other animals are suffering. So maybe, of course, if you know a little bit some physics and law of action and reaction, and even more subtle way what karma actually is, then that's maybe something you can consider that might happen to you as well. So that's something that we have to present to the people and make them aware how many terrible things happen and what is really going on here in this material world, in the name, you know, again, as I said, of the religion, and not just in the name of the religion, in the name of so many demonic propensities connected to the sense enjoyment. So anyway, here, all together, Narada Muni is showing his compassion towards the king, and he tries to make him understand, tries to bring him to the spirit of renunciation and understanding of the essence of the scriptures. He just don't want him to dwell on the superficially performance of the rituals, which many people do and think that that is the essence. No, superficial performance of the ritual is not the essence, but the real in-depth understanding of the purpose of those particular rituals, how important actually it is. And in this way, actually, the person can advance in spiritual life and attain the ultimate aim of human form of life. Okay, Hare Krishna, so I'll just stop here. That's basically it. Are there any questions? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna ji, thank you very much for the enthusiastic lecture. Just want to say one thing, that it's a stupid question, you can ignore it if you want. We definitely say that in the name of religion right now killing is going on, and even without the name of religion also, but then simultaneously when we go to preach, people cross question us in the same way that Mahabharata or the battle of Kurukshetra also happened in the name of religion, dharma. So how to explain this thing to people?
That some particular violence have been committed. It's very simple. It's are you doing something for your sense gratification? You're doing it for God. That's it. It's a very simple answer. If anything is done for the sense gratification, it just depends on the consciousness. Of course, people might not admit. That's the problem then. So if something is done for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's something that it's dharmic, and it's Krishna instructs something to be done, then that is justified then. But if it's just in the name of personal sense gratification, there is no justification for this. And if it's not under the direct order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you cannot justify it. Is that okay?
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, it will be correct, scientifically correct to say that if somebody eat animal, he'll behave like an animal, he'll become an animal.
Well, spiritually, scientifically, yes. They'll definitely have to reap the reaction for whatever they're doing. As I said, the law of karma goes beyond just gross mechanistic way of, you know, action and the reaction. It's also more refined, it's more subtler. But at least on that gross principle, even that's something maybe that can at least those who are scientifically minded make them accept and understand, you know, that there's definitely going to be some reaction for whatever, you know, activities they perform. Otherwise, you know, we come to basic points of the karma, you know. You know, nobody can say, I'm not suffering here in this material world, so how is that you're suffering now? Must be you must have been committing some kind of sinful activities in the past, right? So just discussing, basically explaining the, you know, karmic principles.
Prabhu, Hare Krishna. If I kill an animal in this birth, in my next birth that animal will kill me. Am I correct?
Well, that's what Narada Muni is stating.
Yeah,
here.
Suppose I kill 100 animals in this birth, how many times I will be killed by those animals in my next birth?
Well, it seems like you'll have to take so many birds to be killed. Yeah. Said for every manasamita, for every hair that cow, for example, that's even worse. If you kill a cow, for every hair that cow has on its body, that many times that particular person who is involved in killing the cow will have to take birth and be killed. That's an even greater punishment that actually awaits those who are involved in cow killing. When you speak about cow protection and somehow or other considering the reactions that Srila Prabhupada said, all these wars and all this violence and that is going on, that it's just the reaction of the mistreatment of the animals.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, there are some communities, for example, fishermen. Now, if they don't fish, they can't, because this is their job, so they are bound to fish. So is it sin for them?
It is sin, yes.
So what is the ultimate, I mean, how they can change?
Well, to somebody who does things in knowledge, the reaction definitely is far greater. For somebody who does things in a ignorant way, still they're not excused, you know. Like we gave example of the fire, even the child touches the fire just because of being ignorant about its heat, it won't be excused, it will be burned by the fire. So everybody has to undergo it. So therefore our duty in the human form of life is to inquire. Atato Brahma Jigyasa, it's a duty, it's our duty to inquire. What is our purpose of life? It's our duty to, you know, to know what the law is. It's our duty to do these things. And even fishermen, or we gave the example of Mrigrari, you know, by the mercy of the devotee, he was instructed. I've seen some fishermen, very interestingly, in Gokarna, for example, they have a, you know, they have a, in Gokarna, it's a Shaivite place, it's actually very prominent, Lord Shiva's temple, but the fishermen, they have a murti of Balaji. All the fishermen are Vaishnava, so to say. But they're eating some kind of Vaishnava. But they're eating fish. But it's not really Vaishnava, actually, then, you know. Or in Bengal, you know, if they were Ganga Fal and they'll put some tulsi, they said you have to put some tulsi and offer it, then Krishna will accept or something. I mean, it's, again, it's not dharmic stuff, you know, it's in the name of religion, but it's not what should be done. So it can't be justified, you know, in any way. And nobody can claim, hey, I've been born, that philosophy of the, when the, you know, when the mother is there and the, how's it going, you know, that she was born naked, therefore, you know, somebody has to remain naked all the life. How is that philosophy called? What is that, Nyaya? I forget now. So if somebody has been born in a particular situation, doesn't mean that he has to remain in such kind of situation, that he can't change the circumstances of his life. So that's not justification. Of course, if he has the mercy of somebody to come in touch with a particular knowledge, then he should take to it. And, of course, devotees, duty is to spread this knowledge as much as possible to each and everyone and inform them, you know, about their real religious principles.
In this connection, in this particular example, if a fisherman doesn't fish, then again there is another problem for the society. Those all the fish will die when water is getting dry. So in that case, it will become a reason to, you know, a lot of diseases. So that way also they justify.
Everything is controlled and managed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever happens in the, you have to understand it's a mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Fish dies in this way or that way, that's the fish business. Means according to their karma, basically, if they have to die. But we don't have to get involved in that. At least we can stay away. At least we shouldn't be involved in such kind of a, you know, terrible activities of, you know, committing violence upon the others. At least we can restrain and save ourselves from being involved in such kind of activities. Whatever happens in the nature, that's you know, we don't have to take blame for that, at least. And these are higher arrangements for the benefit of those particular souls in those particular bodies.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, while we are going to outside and we are preaching the people that we should not kill animals and we should not eat meat and fish, so somebody is asking, most of the Muslim people, they are talking that you are talking that we should not kill. So why Ramchandra ran away behind that deer and he wanted to kill that deer?
Who,
so
what?
Ramchandra, Lord Ramchandra. he wanted to kill that deer. He ran by the deer. So what was the motive?
He wanted to capture the deer because the deer, Sita was very attracted by it and she wanted to have it in Ayodhya as a pet. He didn't want to kill him. But when he understood that the deer was a demon, then he decided to kill him. Like Krishna killing Aristasura or the calf demon or anything. That when it's understood that particular so-called either calf or a deer, you know, it's a demonic personality, then Krishna acted in such a particular way.
Same thing they are asking. So why Dasarath means father of Ramchandra? He went to a forest. He killed that Shravan Kumar. He was blind. He was
who?
Shravan Kumar. So Dasarath means father of Lord Ramchandra.
What? I cannot hear.
He went to means forest to hunting animals. Dasarath.
I never heard of that. I don't know. Huh? Anyway, whatever. You can ask me later. I can't hear also half. It's very... Okay, I think we'll stop here. If there is anything else we can... Yeah, we can discuss later, Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. One second. We'll do it after. Yeah.
Thank you.
Because it's the time. I don't want to... Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.